If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Welcome to a new edition of the Career Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Michael Piff, and new episode here. I'm excited to talk to one of my teammates at WGN Radio and an award-winning journalist, reporter, anchor for us here at WGN Radio, Sylvia Snowden. Hi, how's it going?
That's quite an intro. Hi. Is it? I wasn't expecting all that. Thank you, but yes, thank you.
You're welcome. We start every one of our career conversations with a shout out to your high school.
Absolutely. Shout out to the mighty, mighty Mustangs of Morgan Park. I'm a proud graduate of Chicago Public Schools. I attended Morgan Park High School in the city's Beverly community on the far south side.
Okay.
So, hey, south side, good morning, good afternoon, good night.
And what were you like in high school?
What was I like in high school? Well, I was a lot like I am now, except probably a lot less sure of myself. I think that I was always very ambitious in the back of my mind. I had a lot of things that I wanted to do.
Dreams were big back then.
Yeah. And I think at that point in my life, I was more intent on letting the circumstances around me dictate.
Gotcha.
What I could and couldn't do. You know, I wanted to.
If you don't mind
me
prying, what would be an example of that?
I wanted to be a cheerleader.
Okay.
This true story. I wanted to be a cheerleader, but I didn't think that I would make the team because I was never really, I didn't do flips. Mm. I didn't do splits. And I was like, well, there's no point in trying out. You're not going to make it. That was high school Sylvia.
Yes, high school Sylvia.
Now middle-aged Sylvia. If I wanted to be a cheerleader, okay, well, I can't flip today, but I'll practice. I can't do a split today, but, you know, a half a split, a quarter of a split every single day until I can do a split, and I would just keep working at it today until I had it. I was very nosy back then. Now, I'm still that.
I was going to ask, where did the curiosity come from? Was it back in high school?
I was always very nosy and very talkative. And it's so funny because those are two things, at least growing up where I grew up, that weren't necessarily considered positive attributes. People are like, girl, why are you so nosy? Why are you always in people's business? You talk too much. You should just be quiet. And so I think in my mind, I thought that those were things I had to learn to outgrow. It wasn't until maybe, I was in junior high that I first got an inkling that maybe I could have a career in journalism where I could put some of those. I said, someone's going to pay me to talk? You can get paid to be nosy? Stop it.
So early on, you were hoping to get into journalism then?
Yeah, I was probably 13 or 14 when a friend of mine. Yeah. And I guess that high school Sylvia is very proud of this Sylvia, and that's the one dream I had back then that I did not let go of. I think that by the time I really came of age, went to school, I had evolved to the point where I felt like I couldn't let it go. Like that version of me deserved to see at least one thing that I really wanted to have happen actually come true. And so I'm thrilled that it's this.
Back then, were there steps that you were taking towards making that a reality, or kind of how did you kind of get on that path then?
Yeah, you know, I was always a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think at that time I really realized the importance of being a good writer, but we had, even in elementary school, we had a newspaper. One of my classmates started. I wrote for that paper.
You had an elementary school newspaper?
The Observant Journal. Yes.
Wow.
And I think I made $1.25 an issue for my contributions to the paper. And I did that then, not
That's
even
impressive.
Knowing. Yeah. I did that. I also, and these are things just kind of thinking back that may have planted the seed.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother used to always say there were two columnists in Chicago. If you grew up in Chicago, you read the Sun-Times, you read the Tribune, you're probably familiar with Mary Mitchell, and you're probably also familiar with Dawn Turner Trice. My grandmother Well, my grandparents subscribed to both papers, and my grandmother would always save their columns for me to read.
Yeah.
And so I used to do that. And I was in a yearbook in high school. So okay. I think they read, you know, all these kind of little – and I talked a lot. I talked – I'm talking a lot now.
Right. Well, of course. That's what makes it easier when you're listening to
Yeah.
this.
But. Yeah. I was – let me see. Anytime an adult – had an opportunity for a kid to speak, mm-hmm. they always chose me. If it was college prep, if it was high school, if it was church, if there was an opportunity to have a little kid, they all, oh, Sylvia.
Yeah.
And I just, oh, where's the microphone? Okay, let's go. And so, yeah.
Was there other adults that were kind of helping guide you in that direction, though, while you were younger? I know we're focused very much on, like, high school Sylvia here, but
yeah.
As I hear you talk about it, I'm like, wow, she kind of had a lot of it figured out early on, or was like on the way.
I think there were a lot of adults who maybe saw some things in me at that time that maybe I didn't see in myself, up to and including my parents. You know, I think that when you're young, you're like, oh my gosh, they're so annoying. If they don't just get away from me and let me alone. It's not until you get older that you go, maybe they were trying to develop me. Maybe they saw something. A lot of the adults in my church, I belonged to a college prep organization in high school. The executive director of that program was somebody who, I mean, he took me on the college tour where I found Mizzou. He was another person.
Yeah.
Anytime there was an opportunity to speak up and speak out, Sylvia, talk. And a number of my teachers, too, in Morgan Park, I would say, as well, really kind of gave me extra attention and tried to help me, because I think they saw even then, you know, despite a number of challenges I had when I was growing up, that that could potentially be okay one day.
So how did you land on Mizzou? You kind of helped me with the segue here already. So M-I-Z.
Z-O-U. And good on you.
Thank you. I had a brother that went there. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, you and I worked. I never knew that. I'm happy I know that now.
Yeah, I actually went to, he was his 21st birthday, and they had their, it was the selection show. This is, I think, when they were like as high as like a number 3 seed in March Madness.
Yes.
And like we went to like that selection show where they got picked and everything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it didn't end up great after that. But I will say I've been to the campus. I think I've golfed on the campus.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's a gorgeous campus. Okay. So Mizzou, like I said, I knew in high school, since junior high, that I wanted to study journalism. And everybody who knows the media industry knows that if you want to go to a quality journalism program, there is no better program in the country than the Missouri School of Journalism. It is a well-respected, legendary place. Journalists around the country, they revere the Mizzou School of Journalism. So I was in this college prep organization. The organization had a relationship with Mizzou. And I remember the executive director of that program giving me a call and saying, Sylvia, there's a school I want you to see. Now, by this point, I had probably already been on 3 different college tours.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all these other schools picked out. And
what else was on your list, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, my grandmother was an alum of the University of Illinois. So mm-hmm. I was seriously considering going there.
Arch rival.
Yeah, a little bit of border wars drama there.
Yeah.
So I was considering U of I. I was also really considering Howard University in Washington, D.C. They had given me a really nice scholarship package, and I really liked having mm-hmm. visited the school, the campus. And so I wasn't really thinking about Mizzou that much. And my dad was kind of like, you've been on a few college tours. I don't need to know mm-hmm. if you go to another one. So I called the executive director back and said, no, thank you. I don't think I'm going to go on this tour. And he called me back and said, can I talk to your dad? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he spoke with my father and he said, you know, I really, Sylvia wants to study journalism. I think Mizzou would be a really good spot for her. She's been on a few tours. If you'll let her go on this tour, I'll let her go for free because I really want her to see the school.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
That's right. So my dad said, okay, I go on this tour. And I mean, I had visited what had to have been 20 different campuses at this point. But when I got off the bus at Mizzou, I said, oh my gosh, this is my school. I felt it.
Wow. What was it about it?
I don't know. It just, I think when you're a kid, you have, at least I had in my mind,
yeah,
an idea of what college was supposed to look like, what it would feel like, what it would be like. When I got to Mizzou, I saw that vision I'd had in my mind since I was 6 years old, you know, mm-hmm. watching Saved by the Bell, like as a 90s baby. You're thinking, oh, I'm going to go to high school and then go off to college. And just, I had been thinking about college since that point. And that was just what college looked like to me.
And it hit you right away. That's the place.
Instantly. And that was one of the best decisions I had ever made. I love Mizzou. And I loved my time there. It was amazing 4 years.
What were some of the things you were doing as part of the journalism program there?
Well, so Mizzou has this thing called the Missouri Method. And that's why it's such a well-regarded school. Because they make you actually be the town journalist. Like, you're not just some kid who's studying journalism.
Mm-hmm.
They own the NBC affiliate.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We own the NBC affiliate, KOMU, so you're the actual reporter. Like, you're on. And we also had an NPR affiliate. So,
wow.
Yes, you actually have students doing real reporting for real outlets, learning on the fly. So I did spend some time reporting at our NPR affiliate. I did spend some time reporting at our NBC affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
I was also at that point the president of the National Association of Black Journalists my senior year. So I had been very involved with NABJ. I had also tried to do a lot with the J School itself and some of the programs mm-hmm. they had happening. So I was super involved in the university's journalism community.
So you are doing real world things right away.
Yeah.
What are some of the skills that you were developing during that time?
Well, so this is where the story gets interesting.
Yeah.
I was not very good. And it's so, Mike Tyson said one time, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. Getting to Mizzou and sucking at reporting mm-hmm. was the first time I really got punched in the mouth. Okay. I didn't see that coming. I thought I would get in there and I would be.
Just do it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to be Gail King, right?
Yeah.
Just right. Katie Couric, just right out of school. Diane Sawyer. And they used to have us, speaking of Katie Couric, we would have to do the cut-ins.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, she's doing her thing. And then they cut to the local affiliate. And so they cut to us. Katie tossed to us.
Yeah.
And I was so petrified. I mean, I was, you know, talking, but you could see the paper in my hand just fly, and I couldn't keep my hands still. I was so nervous. And I was horrible with the camera because we had to do our own. We had the one man band it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to lug all this heavy equipment. It was too heavy. I couldn't carry it well. I got back. It took me forever to edit. And there were a few times I feel like, did I break down in the car crying? I was like, I didn't think it would be this hard. I didn't think. So I'd say maybe the first thing I learned was resilience.
Yeah.
And I also kind of learned, and I think this is the key for anything you're doing, I kind of learned that I was one of those people who had to succeed no matter what. You know, I'd be in the car and I'd be crying and I'd say eventually, well, Sylvia, we're here now. I mean, you're crying, but you're here. You may as well figure out how to put this together. If you have to sleep in the edit bay, and I did that a lot of times because it would take me 6 hours to edit what should have taken 30 minutes to edit. If you have to work overnight, if you have to stay summers, you have to figure this out because at this point, you committed to it.
Right. It's sink or swim at that
point,
right?
Yeah.
Was there ever a backup plan? Like, was there ever like a
no,
it was always, I'm going to do it.
It was.
Yeah.
It really was. And I had people who I felt like I owed that to, you know.
Who were some of those people that you felt like you
Oh, my goodness. My grandparents. You know, my grandparents would say that their grandparents had been slaves. But my grandparents, and I kid you not, they were college educated. They were homeowners. They were very enterprising. And they used to always tell us, you know, we're expecting you guys to go even further than we've gone. And I remember when they cut the check for my last semester of college, like, I felt like I couldn't go back to them and tell them I couldn't do it.
That's the motivation right
there.
No,
really.
Yeah.
My mother, and we didn't talk a lot about this, but she died when I was 15 years old.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, we've never talked about that, no. Yeah. And she was my biggest supporter, my number one cheerleader. She was a mom who, she had a corporate job, but she still found time to be president of the PTA, to take me to dance lessons, to take me to all sorts of lessons, to wake up and comb my hair every morning to make sure I look presentable for school. And she did all these things with me and for me because in my mind, I believe that she believed mm-hmm. that I could do something big. And in my mind, I couldn't do anything bigger than this. And I was like, there's so many people, you know, the people at church. I just felt like there were so many people and I couldn't accept defeat. And I think more than that, there was little Sylvia too. I mean, who believed that this was our destiny. And I couldn't see myself looking in the mirror and going back to her and being like, yeah, I couldn't cut it. Like I didn't see it.
Yeah.
I couldn't see myself doing that.
So then what, I guess, you're learning the resilience. What are the steps you're taking? I know you kind of mentioned the 6-hour edits and the staying overnight. When did it kind of start to click for you?
So that's funny because it took a very long time. When most people who have plans to become broadcast journalists graduate school, mm-hmm. they send out their tape. They get a job in the middle of nowhere, and they kind of start there, and they work their way up, work their way up, work their way up until they get to a market like Chicago. I didn't do that because there was part of me that was still thinking, I can't do that. I got lost very easily all the time when I was at Mizzou. Mm-hmm. I wasn't very good in my mind. I was worried about the prospect of applying and not getting hired or applying, living in the middle of nowhere and just being overwhelmed by trying to figure it all out.
Right.
So I moved back home to Chicago and I took a gig at the city's public access station.
Is this CAN?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And I said I would do that for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Until I figured out my next steps. That was what I told myself back in 2007, right?
Yeah.
That was what I was going to do. I ended up working at CAN from 2007 until 2023. And
all right, I'm doing the math in
my
head.
Yeah, yeah, that's more than a year and a half.
16 years.
And during the course of that 16 years, I should say, it wasn't for lack of trying. I would be able to maybe get, part-time work at a radio station here. I would maybe be able to get freelance writing gigs, HuffPost, Ebony Magazine, but nothing really materialized into like that journalism job that was mine. And I remember one day, this was during the pandemic, 2020, you know, I'm stuck in the house, like yeah. everyone else.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about my life. You have a lot of time to think when you can't really go anywhere.
Isn't it the truth, though? Yeah.
A lot of time to think. And I thought, man, at this point, 2020, finished school, you know, early 2000s. It's like, I've been out of school like 15 years. And this was not what I saw for my life. Like, no diss to everybody at camp, but I felt like that wasn't what I saw. That wasn't the plan. That wasn't mm-hmm. the vision. And I remember thinking, maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this. And that's why this hasn't worked out. It's been 50, like, maybe yeah. I'm supposed to be doing something else. And I remember praying to God. And it's did you ever see the movie Million Dollar Baby? Hilary
yes.
Swank,
yes,
Clint Eastwood. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Hillary is fighting one weight class above her own, and she's getting whooped. I mean, she's really getting beaten up pretty badly. So badly that her opponent breaks her nose. And the round ends, and she runs back over to her corner, and she tells Clint Eastwood, I'm getting beat in there pretty badly. And Clint's like, yeah, I see. and she's like, well, you have to help me because I'm getting beaten. And he's like, listen, your nose is broken. The doctor's getting ready to call the fire. You're getting ready to lose. She's like, no, you have to help me fix this so I can get in there and win. That was a lot of what my conversation with God was like about this. I was like, listen, God, life is whooping me. He's mm-hmm. like, it is. This wasn't what I saw. He's like, I know that. I'm like, well, you have to fix it. Fix it. And he said, look, you know, I can hook you up with a little cable show, but if you do this, just like Clint told Hillary, you got 20 seconds to go in there and knock life down. You know, can you do that? Yeah, I think I can do it. And I got back in the ring from 2020 to 2023, and I just started throwing haymakers. I got a chance to host a little cable access show about politics
yeah.
that nobody else wanted to host. It was supposed to be hosted by our station's board members. They were all too busy and important.
So it was already kind of in development.
Yeah.
And then did you just say, hey, I'd love to do that? How did that come about?
Well, they gave it to me because no one else wanted to host it. And not only did no one else want to host it, no one else wanted to appear on it.
Okay.
So we had difficulty.
It was already uphill battle.
Yeah. So it was a political show. We were supposed to be featuring Chicago's political figures. It was supposed to be hosted by board members. And it was supposed to be a show that people could tune into to get information
mm-hmm.
about their political happenings in their communities and mm-hmm. in their neighborhoods and really dialogue with these officials. But we couldn't find anyone to host it. We you know, state reps you'd never heard of would cancel on us at the last minute. They didn't think it was worth their time. So they gave it to me.
Yeah.
I was guest hosting, and I was producing first. I was guest hosting. And then in the pandemic, we had to, you know, we were public access, a content share station.
Yeah.
And because of the pandemic, we had to shut down, which hindered us from creating new content.
Mm-hmm.
But since I was an employee of the station and I worked there, they let me or encouraged me to, you know, see what I could come up with. And at that time, you had the politics of the pandemic,
yeah,
how you manage that. You also had at that time what was happening with George Floyd and everything
right.
around race and politics and those issues. And then you had me trying to figure out if I could make this all work. So I said, okay, let's try to talk about the pandemic and what's happening with that through the lens of people from Chicago's South Side and from the Chicago's West Side, people who may not have their vantage points appear on TV as frequently, just to see what happened.
Yeah.
And to my astonishment, it was a winning formula. I mean, the good thing, one, was that the politicians didn't have anything to do either. So they were able to come
on. They needed an outlet.
Right. Yeah. And talk about what they were doing to try to help their constituents.
Yeah.
And two, it just seemed like every single week there was something new. It started, as I said, with just a pandemic, but then it became this moment of cultural reckoning when you had the George Floyd murder. You had the riots happening down here. All this. So every week there was a new angle and a new politician for me to reach out to. And when the pandemic ended and the dust settled, I found that I had done an episode of this show every single week. I found that the board of directors thought I had done such a good job. They wanted me to keep doing the show, so they didn't have to do it. And I just kept the momentum going. I think, you know, I kept trying to find topics that were happening in the news and trying to have conversations with politicians based upon how people from the city's marginalized, underserved communities were being impacted by those decisions. Mm-hmm. And by the time the 2023 mayoral election rolled around, the show had developed such a reputation that I was able to book. I mean, keep in mind, we couldn't get state reps to appear at first. By the time the 2023 mayor's race happened, I had been able to get Paul Vallis, Brandon Johnson, Mayor Lori Lightfoot herself to come to little public access television and give an interview. And that was really, you know, when I began to get noticed as a journalist. That was when Mary Mitchell, whose columns I used to read as a little girl, took me to lunch for my birthday and said, I love what you're doing at camp, but I think you can aim higher, reach further. That was the year I applied to work here and got the job.
Wow. That's incredible. So I need to, there's a lot to unpack there, but not so much unpacking, but now that you applied to the WGN radio job.
Yeah.
Where did you find that first? How did that come about?
LinkedIn. And so LinkedIn actually tapped me, pinged me, sent me an email saying, hey, there's this position open that we think you should apply for. And I, And LinkedIn sent me a second notice, said, hey, job, you should apply. And I said, you know, why not? I have Mary telling me I can do more. In the back of my mind, I'm like, shoot, tripping, I'm killing it. You know, I'm doing great. But, you know, we'll apply to WGN. They probably won't get back to me, but, you know, I'll apply. I applied, and Ashley Byon emailed me. I was like, oh, my gosh. And we did a pre-interview. It went well.
With Ashley?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And she said, you know, I'm going to connect you with the news director. I had a conversation with, and I don't even know if Ryan remembers this, but when we were doing our interview, he said to me, you know, I'm really looking to tell some stories about Chicago that go beyond somebody shot somebody stabbed somebody stole something from somebody. I said, oh, me too. Those are the sorts of stories I want to tell too. And I thought to myself at that moment, oh, I really hope he hires me because the stories I could tell. And he did. And the stories I've told.
And the stories you've told, which I mentioned at the very beginning, award-winning stories.
Yeah.
You have won a Silver Dome, right?
Two, yep.
Two Silver Domes. Sorry if I wasn't counting correctly. And you just won a Lissagore Award.
Yeah.
So how do those come together? They get submitted to a jury or a selection process. How does that all work?
So what happens, the whole story, our news director says, hey, you know, award season is coming up. Mm-hmm. If you all think you have content that may be good for awards, send it to me.
Yeah.
And I'll put together the application. And I sent him every single story. Because I should say that maybe once a quarter, the bug bites me to tell like an original story. And so I sent him everything that we'd worked on every single quarter. And he worked on the presentation package. And what happens is you send the submission to the organization. So I think the Lissagores are conducted by the Chicago Headline Club, which is the Chicago chapter of the Society for Professional Journalists. So SPJ. And they don't actually judge the awards themselves. Mm-hmm. They send them to another chapter in another part of the country to take out all the bias and what have you. And then those people decide which story is the best story. And then they report back to the local chapter who they think did the best storytelling.
So you just recently, you did sit in one of the award, I guess, do you say shows or events? How do you kind of describe it?
Awards events, yeah.
Yeah, at the awards, and you are there with your dad. You were telling me about this before.
Yes.
You brought your dad with.
I did.
And you are kind of in a group of your peers.
Correct.
Which is kind of cool. So are there people you know from other places, outlets that you got to catch up with
and
while this is going on?
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's so funny because a few years ago, like, those people didn't even know who I was. Like, I was huge fans of them and their work and everything they'd accomplished.
Yeah.
They never heard of me. And all of a sudden, you know, I guess maybe in their minds, I come out of nowhere. And
you're like, it's not out of nowhere. I've been working on this for decades.
Man, I'm saying, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But you go and there are all these people. You try not to fan out. You try not to be a fangirl. There are all these legends of the industry who you grew up watching every single night. They're there. And you're not just like observing them. You're competing against them, which is the other weird part.
Yeah.
Like the people who I'm beating out are the people I had been listening to while I was driving into public access. Like, man, I can't believe those are the people you're up against.
That's surreal, isn't it?
It's crazy. And you go and you think, okay, it's just like they say, it's a thrill to be nominated. Mm-hmm. It is just a victory to be nominated.
Yeah.
And I was actually a Listagora finalist in 2025 and I didn't win. So I didn't go in with, well, let me take that story back. I was so angry when we lost. I told Bob Kessler, we're not going to lose to those people again. I guarantee that. Mm-mm, no, I got it now. I'm going to listen to
you. You got your Michael Jordan motivation.
I took that personally.
Yeah, you took that personally. There it is.
Right. We're not going to lose again. And I think that I had that determined mindset that, yes, I got knocked down. Yes, I lost. Yes, I had to go back and tell everybody who I told that I was nominated that I lost, but that was not going to be the end. And I will admit, looking at the category this year, same thing with the Silver Domes. Looking at that, I said, oh, man, this is the number one outlet in the city. These people, that they win everything. I mean, we're going to see, but I don't know. And then we won.
And then they called your name.
right. And you try not to act shocked.
Yeah.
It never works.
Overcomes you. There you go.
So I'm working on acting less surprised. And be like, of course I knew I was going to win. Yeah, of course. But I'm still like, I think that's little Sylvia, just still surprised that after everything that's happened,
Yeah. One of the cool things about getting to know you but also working here with you is I feel like every couple of weeks I see you talking to another group, like a group of young journalists or from, you know, one of the nearby schools. What is that like for you? What, like, is there kind of a bit of a, you know, I've had this experience, I want to share that with, you know, young Sylvia, like you said.
Yeah. Maybe
there's one of those in here.
I mean, I love kids. I love young people. I really enjoyed my experience as a young person, and I really appreciated the adults who weren't too busy, who weren't too important, who weren't too high on themselves to take some time and inspire me. I also think that journalism is one of those industries that may not seem on its face like the sexiest industry to be in. But I think that it's so important, it's so cool, it's so necessary, that if I can just get in a young person's mind to maybe consider a career in journalism, a young person who hadn't thought of it before, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, think about what you could do. And especially, you know, the kids now, and you know this because you're a social media strategist, they're all on TikTok anyway.
Right.
You're all creating vertical videos anyway. Like, you're doing this stuff anyway. Why not? And you know you like it. You know you love it. So,
right? I mean, that's you all. You might not want to admit it, but you do. Exactly.
Yeah, that's all they do all day. So it's like, if this is what you guys are doing anyway, take the next step and consider a career in media. So I love to pour into to kids the way I felt like so many people poured into me. And hopefully, I don't know, we'll see some of those kids I talk to walk in these halls one day. We'll see.
Just a couple more questions from her. Thank you very much for your time doing this, too. I really appreciate it. What's it like working in a WGN radio newsroom?
So it's a dream come true. And it's, remember what I was saying a few minutes ago about trying not to fangirl?
Yeah.
That's probably been like one of my biggest challenges working here. Like, oh my, like I remember walking in and seeing Steve Bertrand in person for the first time. And I wanted to go, oh my gosh, you are Steve. But I couldn't do that because I'm a colleague now. The same, Lisa, I loved listening to Lisa in the car. John, I think John Williams is brilliant. Bob Surratt, you know, grew up with. So when you come into a situation like that, I think you feel the weight of 100 years of excellence and you think, how can I contribute to this? How can I fit into this? And gosh, how can I keep from not messing it up? Which is always like the hardest part. But I really feel like being here has challenged me. I've grown so much. I've learned so much. And I really appreciate all of my colleagues for making me feel like I belong here and I can do this work. And I don't know, like, if they had been different people in that respect, if I would have been able to do all the things I've been able to do here.
That's amazing. Last thing, for the young person, again, young Sylvia.
Yeah.
We're talking to young Sylvia here. Your advice to her as she is looking ahead, or a young person, say, one of the interns here too. Advice for them wanting to do what you do.
Sure.
I know you've kind of shared a ton of amazing advice already and wisdom. I'm not just saying that. It's been really cool. My jaw's been dropped a lot of this time. That's why I've been really bad at asking questions, because I'm just like listening to you tell your story, and it's been incredible.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think the biggest thing I would say to young me, or to say to a young intern, girl, don't worry about them. Keep going. I think anyone who has really been successful at anything has had to get over their fear of failing in front of people. I think that is key number one. Don't be afraid to make a mistake, because they're going to happen. Michael Jordan took the last shot and missed it. We've certainly seen LeBron do it.
Right.
We've seen, you know, Beyonce's had brand deals that have fallen through. We've seen Princess Kate struggled through her first speeches as a royal. Like, we see these things happen. But I think that what happens when you are intent upon being successful, when you're intent upon being good at anything, is you take that failure and you use it as an opportunity to assess where you can be better, the things that you can and should do differently next time, so that you get a different result. If a politician hangs up in my face because they don't want to talk to me, how can I refine my pitch? Mm-hmm. So the next time the answer is yes. If I don't do a job anchoring my newscast, how can I go back and listen to what I did poorly so I can self-correct next time? So don't be afraid. I mean, obviously you want to try to make the right decisions and the right moves all the time, but that won't always happen. When it doesn't happen, don't run from it. Don't be ashamed of it. Embrace it. Take it on. Absorb it. Learn from it and come back and do it better the next time. I think that's the key.
That's a great way to wrap this up. Sylvia, thank you very much for doing this. And thank you for those listening. You can catch our previous episodes on WGNRadio.com or wherever you get your podcasts, like Apple or Spotify. And we're trying to make this more of a weekly podcast, so get excited for the next one. Thank you, Sylvia, very much for doing this.
Thank you, Michael.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.